This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, extreme exposure. Every now and again, we ask poets to come on the podcast to talk about poems and poets that they're excited about. Idra Novi is a poet and translator.
Her latest novelist.
I was getting there.
I was like, her
latest book is Ways to Disappear, which is a novel. So that would make her a novelist as well. So let's get right to it. When I asked you what poems you'd like to talk about, you chose poems by Robert Fernandez and Robin Schiff. And let's start with Robert Fernandez. The poem on our website that you chose is called And, which is one of the most unusual titles of a poem I've ever seen. What would it help to know about this poem before we hear him read it?
Well, I think when a poet is also a translator, it's always fascinating.
Like myself.
To think about how the poet that they have translated has infused and enriched their poetry. And I think that that's a really helpful thing to do when reading Anne Carson or reading Merwin. And I think with Fernandez, who translates Mallarmé, that you can definitely see how he plays with register in this poem and in a number of poems.
And Mallarmé, let me interrupt, is the great early modernist French poet. Who wrote often very cryptic and very musical poems that don't seem to connect with the real world in an obvious way. I think that's one way to put it.
Yes, and Fernandez has written about that, you know, his own impulses thinking about imagery and economy of language were not things that are prominent in the poems that he was translating by Mallarmé. But what he did find is that they both had this impulse to go for total extreme exposure in the language.
Extreme exposure in their language. What does that mean?
I think that they push the intensity of the poem as far as it can go, that there's no holding back in terms of sort of there's this like building intensity in the language and the emotion and to just take it as far as it could go.
Well, let's hear it. Here's Robert Fernandez reading And.
Give us water and food to pursue our tasks. Help us not become wards of the state, impoverished, homeless, destitute, crushed under the heel, buried in systems, imprisoned, dead, hospitalized. We die. Our dogs will not walk themselves after we go. Our bodies will not burn themselves after we go. Our apartments will not pack themselves after we die. Instead, bright ribbons of work tangled in our bodies will be vomited out, and indeed, bright ribbons will be vomited out. In the meantime, the light's eyelashes open and close. And in the meantime, work and reprieve. Lie down. Don't lie. Lie flat. Lie still. See these books bound in itching white leather? They are your life. And each feathery page lifted by hot wind. O summer air, O gardens, O seasons, O chateau. The glaring day it binds. O occurrence, O soil, O soul.
That was Robert Fernandez reading his poem, And... And so it begins, Idra, like a prayer, but it's a very odd prayer. It's not, "Oh Lord, give us our daily bread." It's, "Give us water and food to pursue our tasks.
Help us not become wards of the state, impoverished, homeless, destitute, crushed under the heel, buried in systems, imprisoned, dead, hospitalized."
Yeah, those are very real and very contemporary fears.
Well, I think Robert Fernandez is a poet of political imagination. And I think that often we think of poetry as being a place for self-actualization. And he's saying, well, can you go and write that kind of poetry with all these problems confronting us?
Yeah, and it's very odd that dead is just one of the list of calamities that could afflict us. You know, he's got a list. It's impoverished, homeless, destitute, wards of the state. Dead. It's that struck me. It's like one of many things that could go seriously wrong with one's life.
And that dogs could outlive us. Our dogs will not walk themselves after we go, which assumes that they will outlive the calamities that humanity has made for itself.
We die. Our dogs will not walk themselves after we go. Our bodies will not burn themselves after we go. Our apartments will not pack themselves after we die.
So in other words, there's work to be done, and we won't be around to do it.
No.
Because we'll be dead.
Yes.
So part of me thinks that there's something, if it weren't for the serious subject matter here, there's something slightly tongue-in-cheek about that.
It is a cheeky poem, and I think that often if you want to talk about political realities, that you have to bring a sense of humor to it, and that when you do, you can actually push the poem further, and that humor, some element of tongue-in-cheek, actually allows you to risk more in the poem than if you were being dead serious.
Yeah, good point. Then the poem takes this very surreal turn.
Instead, bright ribbons of work tangled in our bodies will be vomited out, and indeed, bright ribbons will be vomited out.
What do you make of that? I didn't know what to make of that. Other than that's a very surreal, odd bit. Bright ribbons of work.
Yeah, I think when we think of bright ribbons, you might think of red ribbons almost as blood. And so work is almost, you know, the sort of pouring out in these rivulets, the way maybe it's like, you know, the blood of the body. But I think more than anything, it's, again, that there's something extreme about it and bodily extreme about it. And also his use of repetition there, I think, is as important as the image itself, that the image is extreme and you get it twice, which I think ups the ante of it in a way that I think is in the keeping of Mallarmé. There isn't a hesitation about using repetition for emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bold. It's bold to believe in a line enough to repeat it right after itself.
The rest of the poem is concerned about what we do before we die. And it begins with "and."
And in the meantime, work and reprieve. Lie down. Don't lie. Lie flat. Lie still. See these books bound in itching white leather? They are your life. And each feathery page lifted by hot wind. O summer air, O gardens, O seasons, O chateau, the glaring day it binds, O occurrence, O soil, O soul.
So what do you make of this? It begins in supplication and prayer and ends with this catalog of commands, basically.
Yeah, and I think that use of imperatives at the end, you know, that the feathery page lifts, but the body is still, is a really powerful juxtaposition. And all these lines have these juxtapositions. Lie down, don't lie, glaring day and soil. And I think that the poem is trying to see the movement of literature in opposition, perhaps, to the body in the ground.
Draw that out. What do you mean, literature in opposition to the body in the ground? Is something to do with that image? See these books bound in itching white leather?
They are your life.
Why itching?
Oh,
it's such a rich image. It makes you think, how does that itching? It's as if they're alive, right?
It's as if they're alive. I also think when you think of your body still, often you're aware of some small itch at the bottom of your foot or on your arm. And so you have the stillness of the body and then these books. And then, you know, things that itch remind you that you're in your body. And I think it can happen that when you're reading, you get distracted because something's itching or because you're cold or because you're hot or the glaring day or the feathery wind. And so I think there's this things, these books are your life, but you can't escape your body. Your body is what you're reading in.
And the wind, the hot wind, is turning these pages beyond our will. We can't really control what the wind is doing to us.
The poem moves from being buried in systems and imprisoned and these things that we sort of think of in things that happen to a collective of people. And then in the end, it's this person alone, right? It's just one body with one book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's something powerful about this poem, which is so compact and dense.
Yeah.
And it moves from these systems that bury people and then this solitary moment alone with the book.
Yeah. Let's turn now to Robin Schiff and her poem. It's called "A Doe Replaces Iphigenia on the Sacrificial Altar." And I guess, Idra, the first thing we need is a little refresher on Iphigenia. She was the daughter of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra. And to get to the Trojan War, Agamemnon didn't have a good wind for his sailing ships, so he had to sacrifice his daughter Iphigenia. And then at some point, Clytemnestra is told, no, Iphigenia was not sacrificed. A doe was put in her place. So that's a bit of the background of the poem. Anything else that might be helpful to know about this?
Well, this poem appears in Robin Schiff's latest book, which is brilliant, Women of Property. And it's all about this question of whether a woman is property or a woman has property. A woman is used as property. And so I think that this poem plays into that notion or that question of Iphigenia being used this way and then the doe replacing her and sort of how women historically could be used for strategic aims such as, you know, wind for a boat.
One quick question before we hear it. Who is speaking in the poem? Is it Iphigenia or the doe?
Well, you know, with William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying,
right,
one never knows who the I is in the title and who exactly lays dying. And I think in this poem, there's a similar willful ambiguity.
I think that's right. Here's the poem.
A doe replaces Iphigenia on the sacrificial altar. I appeared in the confusion between strength and surrender, as if out of nowhere, that's the illusion. I was reared ruminating in a thicket of sorrow with a beautiful string of drool hanging out the side of my mouth like a loose phosphorescent tether. How will I know what to do? I wondered. No one does, my mother said. And then, as the drawing back of the ocean before a tsunami suddenly exposes outrageous fish on the seabed, gasping, a great inhalation placed me here, panting on the sacred grass. I feel like a girl in heaven, but I am a beast in a clearing. I came to as the wind picked up, and in the bay as the tide came in, what a blow to mankind, an animal crude wind to war, toward war, untoward, toward war, took my breath away with it.
That was Robin Schiff reading your poem, A Doe Replaces Iphigenia on the Sacrificial Altar, from her book, A Woman of Property. So take us through this a little bit. What has happened? What's the trajectory in this poem?
The poem is taking the story about Iphigenia as talking about a woman and her daughter having a conversation about the threats of the world in general. And so though it moves from this tale of myth, that moment in the middle, how will I know what to do, I wondered. No one does, my mother said.
Yeah.
Seems to be the tension driving the poem.
And in fact, that's exactly right. Actually, nobody does know how what to do.
Nobody knows what to do.
Nobody knows.
Even if you're not escaping an altar to be replaced by a doe.
Yeah, even if your situation is not quite as dire as Iphigenia's is.
And I think that's what we go to myths for, is that they create these extreme stories that we can identify with and maybe recognize and admit the extremity of our own emotions.
Yeah. Let's go through this a little bit more in detail.
I appeared in the confusion between strength and surrender, as if out of nowhere, that's the illusion.
So that's the situation of Iphigenia or the doe, but it's also the existential situation of all of us when we come into the world. We are weak, and we seem to have come out of nowhere.
And I think that that's a parallel with Robert Fernandez's poem, where he's talking about lie down, don't lie, surrender, get up. You know, these poems are both sort of looking at admitting weakness and surrendering to weakness and what to do with that as a person. And I think that although Robin Schiff's poems doesn't bring up being buried in systems and homelessness, that there is something here that's getting at that same desire to speak to larger issues about who in society is placed in a position of vulnerability.
Confusion between strength and surrender, as if out of nowhere. That's the illusion. And the poem goes on.
I was reared ruminating in a thicket of sorrow with a beautiful string of drool hanging out the side of my mouth like a loose phosphorescent tether.
It's a very vivid image, but it's pretty gross, too, at the same time.
It is. It's like the bright ribbons of work, and now we have the string of drool. I think both of them are sort of looking for these bodily liquids, you know, and how these bodily liquids mean that you can't escape the vulnerability of your body. It's impossible.
And then there are those very poignant lines that you pointed out earlier.
How will I know what to do? I wondered. No one does, my mother said.
And yet if the poem had begun there without setting up this extreme situation, I don't think it would resonate the same way.
Right, right.
And so I think that that's something that is really powerful about this poem, that this confusion between strength and surrender and the vividness of that image of the drool hanging out the side of my mouth and then the question. And so it really pulls you into the question so that you feel it yourself.
Yeah. And then the poem moves on to a dramatic event.
And then, as the drawing back of the ocean before a tsunami suddenly exposes outrageous fish on the seabed, gasping, a great inhalation placed me here, panting on the sacred grass. I feel like a girl in heaven, but I am a beast in a clearing.
Again, that confusion between girl and doe could be either one. What do you make of the tsunami? I bet I'm sure this poem was written after the tsunami of 2004 or 2005 that killed so many thousands of people in Indonesia.
And also in the south of Chile.
Also, that's right. The same thing, the same tsunami. Yeah. What do you make of that image, which is almost cartoonish because you imagine these fish gasping on the seabed. But it's also, again, a very serious topic.
It is. And I think it's, again, that collective fate, you know, of all the fish together, of these natural phenomena such as a tsunami that affects all of us. And then to be a single girl or a single beast. And so I think this poem is also looking at that tension between everybody together and then the loneliness of being alone on an altar that way.
I came to as the wind picked up, and in the bay as the tide came in, what a blow to mankind, an animal crude wind to war, toward war, untoward, toward war, took my breath away with it.
I love that ending. I mean, it's so rhythmically powerful, and it really, really drives home a conclusion. An animal crude wind to war, toward war, untoward.
In a certain way, that seems almost like wordplay, because to war, if you just add a D, becomes toward.
Yes.
So that the word war, she's showing how it is inside that word toward. And so that when this tsunami comes toward, it has that word war inside the word.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, and it's also talking about the use of the female body being used in a sacrificial way or as a form of strategy is really one of the underlying darknesses in the poem.
Thanks, Idra.
Thank you.
You can read poems by Robin Schiff, Robert Fernandez, and Idra Novi on our website. Idra Novi's latest book is a novel, Ways to Disappear, it's called. As always, let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. Also, let your friends know what you thought of it on social media. The podcast is easy to link to on SoundCloud, and you can subscribe to it, as always, in the iTunes Store. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.